This episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by our friends at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. As soon as we decided to go to the Tower of Terror 10-miler, the first people we called were MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. Why? Because we wanted the confidence that our vacation plans would be handled by experts. They go out of their way to do a great job and ensure that our vacation goes well. Please contact them by clicking on the link on the Mickey Miles Podcast website or by going to MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 105 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today. And with me on the show, one of many people, hundreds of people on the show, is Michelle Scribner-McLean. Michelle, how are you doing today?
I'm fine. I'm excited because everybody on the show has a name that begins with the letter M. So,
yes.
I don't know. That's a very elementary school teacher of me, but I noticed that. So, Mike, I did my magic mile yesterday, more M words, and it was really kind of fun. So I'm excited to see what sort of magical formula Jeff puts it through to tell me what pace I should be training at. But it should be interesting.
Earlier this week, Michelle, on a previous show, we talked about how you were doing the Magic Mile and I was experimenting with something that Jeff had talked about with us. And I wanted to report back that today I did a 30-15 experimental run, a two-hour run, and I am very pleased, and I'm going to continue using those intervals, 30 seconds of running and 15 seconds of walking, at least for the 10-miler coming up, the Tower of Terror 10-miler, and probably wine and dine and see what it gets me. But so far, so good. Just wanted to report back.
We're always learning. Before we go on, I have a shout-out. This is a really cool one. This is to our friend Sandy Hall, who lives just down the road from me in she lives in Groton, Mass., but she did the Littleton Road Race. It's a town right next to Groton, Mass., 5K. She is a relatively new runner. She came in third in her age group, but this is the really cool part. I mean, that's fantastic as it is. But she ran in the race. Her son ran in the race, and her grandson ran in the race. So it was three generations of people running in that race. And I just think it's so great. What a great thing for the grandson to see his grandmother and father running. So big shout-out to Sandy. That's awesome.
That's pretty cool. Congratulations, Sandy. We have two guests with us on the show, and I would love to introduce them and then tell everybody what we're going to talk about. But you may have figured it out if you listened to the music at the beginning. First, from Wilmington, Delaware, we have first time appearing on Mickey Miles Podcast, Melissa Iannetta. Melissa, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike.
Our second guest has a name that may be familiar to a number of people, especially if you are a podcast junkie like myself. He hails from St. Louis, Missouri, and his name is Mike Rauman, and you may know him from the Be Our Guest podcast. Mike, it's a privilege and an honor to have you come on to Mickey Miles Podcast.
Hey, I'm honored to be here today. I know you guys have kept me company over the last couple months out on the roads. And, you know, the irony of me being on a Disney running podcast, it's just something else. But I'm honored to be here today.
He has such a dreamy podcast voice, I have to say. It's dreamy. Hey, Melissa, you're a teacher, right? And Mike, I know you're a teacher.
Yes, I'm a professor of English at the University of Delaware, where I keep writing.
Great. So we have three teachers on the show here, Mike.
That's right. That's an education roundtable.
I have a degree in education, too, so make
there
that four.
There we go. All right, let's get rolling.
Okay, so today's date is September 26th. This show will be posted on September 26th. And I believe that is approximately a week and a half from the Tower of Terror, the Run Disney Tower of Terror 10-miler. So we thought this would be a good time to discuss this upcoming race. So we've asked Melissa and Mike to come on and help us do a little roundtable discussion. And what we want to talk about is last year's race. We want to talk about our experiences. We want to talk about what we would like to see changed, what our expectations are for this year. And then after we talk about that, we're going to go down the line. And we have a list, Michelle. Do you want to describe what this list is?
Sure. So we thought that in keeping with the 10 theme, we would do a top 10 things you know need to know about the Tower of Terror 10-miler. That's alliteration. Was that good, Melissa? Alliteration? So we're going to give you a list of things, top 10 things that you need to remember as you are preparing and going through the weekend at the Tower of Terror 10-mile.
Okay. Now let's – so ladies first. So Melissa, I'm going to turn to you first. And could you give us a brief description of what you remember from last year's Tower of Terror, what you liked, what you didn't like, and general impressions of the race?
I was the perfect person, I think, to run the Tower of Terror last year because it was my first long Disney race. So when everybody else is saying it's boring, there's not enough entertainment, it's not well enough organized, it seemed fantastic to me. I thought the price was pretty good because I was getting – that was my first long race period, as a matter of fact, and it was on my way to doing my first half marathon that January. And compared to the price for the half marathon, it was under $100, so I thought that was pretty good. I love Halloween, so I thought the theming was fantastic. The weather, I found out, really doesn't bother me because Delaware is – like, it's still very hot in Delaware now a lot of the time, so I transitioned in pretty smoothly. The course was nice and flat compared to where I'm running at home. And I don't check a bag when I run, so the big drawback there wasn't really a problem for me.
And why did you decide that you want to come back this year?
Well, the primary reason I decided to come back was I thought it was my shot at doing a legacy race someday. You know, if you don't get in on the ground floor, you're not going to be able to move forward with the race. But when thinking about this podcast today, which I was actually thinking about while I was out running today, all very themed, I was thinking, well, you're going to do the mini 10K in January. So if they don't bring up their game a little, now that I've gotten spoiled by other Disney races, if they don't bring up their game a little, you know, you could always just switch your legacy dreams to the mini 10K. I also am coming back because I'm bringing a friend who hasn't ever run a Disney race. Hello, Rita. And I'm really excited to share this with her.
Oh, that's great.
Michael, I think – I don't know if it was the Tower of Terror race last year or Wine and Dine the year before, but I remember a couple of times running along, I want to say Osceola, and I remember coming up next to you and you'd go by me and I'd go by you and everything. And I remember you running with your long legs, and I said, yeah, I wish I had my legs were as long as Mike's. How did you see last year's race? What impressions do you have of the inaugural race? The inaugural races that Run Disney runs always has a few glitches and a few issues. So I'm curious to see and hear what you recall from last year.
Well, the thing about this race is that we have a big group that goes down this weekend right at the beginning of the Food and Wine Festival, which is it's a nice time to be down for an extended weekend. And 2 years ago when we started the Wine and Dine, it was at the beginning of the festival. So we ran that the first couple of years and then Run Disney threw this new race in last year saying it was a 10-miler and, you know, had a different course. And I was, you know, I enjoy the environment of the races, but honestly, I'm not a runner. So I, you know, I heard 10 miles over 13.1 and I thought, you know what, that's 3.1 miles less to the finish line. So I'm going to give that a shot and, you know, really enjoyed it. I think the big memory that most people have is the heat and the humidity from the race, which is obviously something that is out of Disney's hands. But it, you know, it became a big issue with bag check later on because people were just to their exhaustion point, I think. But, yeah, you know, I really did enjoy the race. That's why I signed up for it again. It's a great weekend to be down there. There's a great environment, you know, a nice party afterwards. The studios is a unique venue to kind of do that. But I will say that, you know, one of the things I wish they would change is that during marathon weekend, you have a lot of spectators out there on the course and encouraging you. And you just don't see that quite as much during this race. So being somebody who, you know, really works hard to get to the end, you know, it's a huge accomplishment just to see the finish line, seeing friends and family and, you know, just other folks out there with inspiring signs. you know, it really does a lot. And you get that at Champion Stadium, but not too much along the course. But, you know, it's a fun race, and I'm really looking forward to being down there again in a few days.
I think that's a great point. It's a sort of a theme with most of the night or the night races in general. You don't have a lot of people cheering at Wine and Dine either. So Mike, you said you bring a big group down there. Is that a group of people who listen to your podcast?
Yeah, we do something called Epic October where we just get together and, you know, have a good time, go to the Halloween party, sample food and wine, and, you know, just kind of run around the parks, get to see each other, you know, a few times a year. This is one of those times where a lot of us will either, you know, jump in the 5K or do the distance race. And what I really enjoy is every year we see more folks, you know, giving a shot with the 5K, you know, taking that first step, and then folks kind of graduating from a 5K into the 10 miler or, you know, even at the Wine and Dine weekend, which I won't be there for that, but some of our listeners will, that they are going for that first half marathon. And, you know, it's the journey. It's not the destination, especially with running. You know, it's seeing friends through Runkeeper, through social media, get up and get out on the road. And it's really inspiring. So it's a neat way to kind of combine the best time of the year down at Walt Disney World, but also a lifestyle change. And that's really, you know, encouraged me seeing so many friends do that. And it's kind of coming full circle. And I've been getting up off the couch here for a couple of months, which is kind of nice.
That's great.
Yeah, that's a good way of framing it, Mike. Well, we looked at the final race instructions for this year, and Michelle and I looked at them, and we noticed a few things and that we wanted to bring up with the show. And actually what we ended up doing is we ended up putting together what I guess we could call the Tower of Terror 10-miler top 10 things that you should know regarding this race. So we'd like to go through them with the two of you and maybe discuss a little bit of each. And we're going to start off with number one, and actually I'm going to let Michelle start us off.
Okay, so we decided that we would make our top 10 list based on the order that you need to consider things as you're going through the weekend. So the first thing is something that Run Disney started doing for the Disneyland half, which was if you're picking up, you have to think about this before you go to the race. If you're picking up a packet for somebody else, as I have done many times, you need to bring three things instead of two things. You need to bring a copy of their driver's license or ID. You need to bring a copy of their waiver that's signed, and you need to bring another form, which is called the packet pickup authorization. And so those three things, they will not give you the bib or the packet unless you have all of those things. You also need to remember to print out your own waiver. You can do it there at the expo, but it's much faster if you have your own waiver. Melissa and Mike, have you ever forgotten to bring your waiver?
I haven't forgotten to bring my waiver because I have my Disney folder with all my obsessive items in there. But my stepdaughter and I, when we did the Expedition Everest, I brought a copy of her materials with me so I could pick up her packet if her plane was late. And I thought that was a nice little organizational add-on, that if you're afraid, if you don't know if somebody's plane is cutting it too close, you can always bring a copy of those forms in case they don't get in on time.
It's a good point.
I forget. Yeah, I forget it every single year.
You forget it every year? And so what would you make a case for people trying to remember? Well, it's pretty easy to print out there, but why would you not want to?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing I've noticed. It's not that big a deal. Every time it's my seventh race and, you know, it's 5 minutes and I've got it printed up pretty quickly. And it's just one of those things because I'm usually in the park before I head over to the expo and just jump over and print it and go on, which, you know, I should do better. You know, do as I say, don't do as I do. That's kind of my philosophy. You should print it before you leave home.
The funny thing, Mike, is I find, I don't know if it's just me, but when I get there, it's just like, I feel like I'm not really running the race until I get my stuff, you know, until I get my bib, until I get my shirt. So that would just like drive me over the edge, send me over the edge to have to wait in line to print out the waiver. But it's good that it didn't take you very long.
No, it's not bad.
Okay, it's so bad. I'm sorry, Melissa, do you want to say something?
Oh, I was just going to say it's nice that you have me and Mike on today because clearly we're taking two different approaches. He's not bringing his waiver and I'm bringing other people's for no reason.
Exactly. Well, when you go to the expo to pick up your packet or someone else's packet, you need to know how to get there, and you need to know what the hours are. Number two on our top things you need to know for the Tower of Terror is information regarding transportation to the Health and Fitness Expo and the hours. So I will talk about the transportation hours and how to get there. Then I will turn it over to Michelle, and she'll talk about the actual hours for the expo. So if you happen to be at a host resort, and I'll quickly go through the host resorts for this race. It's All Star Movies and Sports and Music. It's the Beach Club. It's Caribbean Beach. It's Polynesian. It's Port Orleans French Quarter. It's Saratoga Springs. It's the Yacht Club. It's Old Key West Pop Century, Riverside, Port Orleans Resort Riverside, and the Wilderness Lodge. If you stay at any of those resorts, you will be able to take transportation to the expo starting at 11:30 on Friday, October 4th, and that will be ongoing up until 7:30 on Friday night. It concludes at 8:30 on Friday night, it says. On Saturday, if you are in a host resort, you'll be able to go to the expo starting at 9:30 in the morning. The bus will leave at 9:30 from the host resort, and it will those shuttles will continue till about 3:30 p.m. Transportation from expo to the host resorts concludes at 4:30. So if you're at one of those resorts and you don't have a car, that's when you can board the bus to take a bus to the expo. Now, Michelle, what are the actual hours for the expo?
So at the Wide World of Sports, it's Friday from 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. and Saturday from 10 to 4. And they stress that they're not going to be handing out bibs at the start of the race. So you need to go get your bib ahead of time. So, Mike, when do you get to the expo? Do you get there early to get things, or do you take your time?
Yeah, usually I'll go to a park that morning on Friday and then hop over to, drive over to the expo because we have a car. And, it's insanity there with the crowds, but the Wide World of Sports tends to be a great venue for packet pickup. It's not too chaotic. And, I don't know, Melissa, do you get the butterflies in your stomach when you arrive there? Because that's when I start to get, the nerves start setting in. So what do you think, Melissa? Do you get that too?
Now, I'm a woman who almost didn't get out of high school because she failed gym. So for me to say this, that's when I start to feel like an athlete, like I'm at the Wild World of Sports and I'm going in and I've got my stuff and I see the signs. And I do find that very, very exciting.
That's very cool. That's very cool. So, Mike, do you stick around and buy a whole bunch of things at the expo?
I don't buy anything because this is the first time in my life that I've actually done the requirement that's there. The celebration is the race is the way I've kind of changed my outlook on things. And I may buy a new pair of sneakers down there this time because I've almost worn out my current pair over the summer, and I will be looking at the merchandise a little bit more than in the past. I've kind of glanced over some t-shirts, and my daughter's a cross-country runner, so I'd pick her up a couple things. But I'm excited this year. I actually kind of know a little bit about the merchandise, so I'm excited to spend some time there.
Melissa, what about you?
I want to buy all the things. I'm always torn between I don't want to deal with huge crowds at the expo, but I always think but Melissa, when she gets home, she's going to want the things, And when I went last year, I actually managed to finagle a business trip that paid for all my expenses aside from the actual, race related expenses. But because of that, I couldn't go to the expo. So I'm hoping to make up for that this year.
Well, the economy in Florida will thank you. All right. The next thing on our list is packet pickup. And Mike, why don't you tell us what we were going to talk about for packet pickup?
For packet pickup, again, this is sort of involved with obviously you need your waiver before you can pick up your packet.
So we're going to go over to the – is it still called the Milk House, the HP House?
It's the Milk House, which is the far end to the left. And I'm not expecting as big a crowd as there was for January or, for that matter, in Disneyland. You'd go in there, and, of course, you go over to the
go downstairs.
Right, it's downstairs, and there are volunteers set up, and there are booths, and if you have your waiver, you will be able to see what number you are, and you would go in line for your number, and you would show them your waiver, and you would show them your ID, and they would give you your B tag, and I don't know if you would get your bib. I don't know if you get your race shirt down there, because I remember, Michelle, going over to the Jostin Center, which is across the way, to get the shirt. The instructions that we have, final instructions, say you will be picking up your B tag, your race bib, and your race shirt in your gear bag. But we'll see what happens. Yeah, okay. I just noticed that.
All right. So, yeah, usually you go across the way and you have to go all the way through the expo to get your shirt. So, okay. So, Melissa, Mike, anything to add to packet pickup? Kind of crazy if you're a new runner. Maybe it's a little intimidating. Any advice?
I'm always that person who's going the wrong way, who people are looking at you thinking, why did you think you could go down these stairs? So don't feel bad if that's you. And if you see somebody who's 6 feet, a 6 foot tall woman looking confused doing it, say hi to me.
Mike?
I just really enjoy it. Again, that's the kind of the kickoff of the weekend, and you get to see your fellow runners out there, and it's a great environment. Everybody's so supportive, and you know, it's the beginning of you know, you trained for this, so let's have a good time and let's get it started right now by getting our bibs and our t-shirts.
That's the time you get the first taste of how wonderful Run Disney volunteers are too, because they're usually handing out the bibs and the t-shirts, so they're awesome.
100%.
All right, Mike, what's number four?
Number four, we're talking about transportation to and from the races and the party. And first off, we should make sure that we do not overlook that there is a 5K that weekend. And that will take place on Saturday, October 5th. And transportation from, again, those host resorts will begin at 5:30 in the morning. And Run Disney is asking that all participants board buses no later than 6:30 in order to make it to their corrals by 7:15. So they want everybody in their corrals by 7:15. There are also going to be some Run Disney kids races that particular day, and they want families with participants in the kid races to have everybody on the buses no later than 8:30 in the morning, because they want everybody to make it to their corrals by 9:15. Okay, so that takes care of the 5K trail run and the Disney kids races. The next bit of information is very important, because when we looked over the transportation and driving directions, Michelle and I were making sure every question that we would have would be answered. So we're hoping to cover that. One thing that everybody should understand is that you cannot drive to the studios on that night. There is no parking.
Which is where the race will start.
Which is where the race starts in the film area. Mm-hmm. It's right around the corner from where the cast members go in the studios. So in order for you to get there, well, if you stay at the Swan Dolphin Boardwalk Beach or Yacht Club, you could actually walk there. But if not, then you would take a bus. Again, bus from the host resort. And they are saying that transportation will begin at 7 o'clock on that Saturday, which is October 5th, and it will conclude at 4:30. That's 4:30 in the morning on Sunday. They want everybody to be on their buses no later than 8 o'clock, and that's because they want everybody to be in their corrals by 9:15. It says that transportation will continue throughout the evening for the spectators. Michelle, do you want to talk about the those people who are driving?
Sure. I think the most important thing is that you cannot park at the studios, as you said, number one. And number two, you can't, if you have somebody who's willing to drop you off, nobody can drop you off at the studios either. They can drop you off at ESPN, Wide World of Sports, or you can park there. So, Mike, you said that you have a car. I'm wondering what you're going to do this weekend. I know I usually have a car, and I usually go with the bus system for this. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I do the same. I take the bus from the resort, and you know, I think that's, again, your easiest way, because Disney's going to have the priority on the roads, and they know how to get you. They have the logistics down, and the bus ride, I think, it's a lot less stressful than hopping in your car and try to navigate all this, because you know it's a time where you can sit down and have some peace there on the bus, maybe put in your iPod, listen to some music that's going to get you ready and the right mindset for the race, and you know, get off your feet there. And even if it takes a little bit longer, you know, you're going to be standing in the corrals there for a while. So just enjoy the comfort of the bus.
Here's something to consider too, Mike. If you have to drive your car over to ESPN, then take a bus to studios, it might be 3 o'clock in the morning, and where's your car going to be?
Exactly.
So you don't want to have that. I mean, this is kind of a unique race in that where you start is different from where you're going to park your car. So, Melissa, what are you going to do for this?
Actually, I'm going to take advantage of the fact that I've got three Disney sages talking to me right now. We're going to walk from Beach Club Villas, I do believe. And I was wondering how long you guys would say I need to leave to walk it.
I would say it's about a mile and a half, a mile and a quarter, maybe. I would say a leisurely half an hour.
That sounds good.
Mike Rama, do you agree?
Yeah, I'd agree, unless you want to run that. You know, you could sprint it over there.
It's just kind of nice. And I think
I have a marathon T-shirt if I run it, Mike.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's kind of nice. You know, I never feel unsafe walking that route back. And because you'll be with a lot of other party goers, you should be fine walking back too. You will be fine. it's well lit, and there'll be lots of other people too.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else we want to say about transportation, Mike?
I think we're all set. The only other thing was that there was nothing specified in the final instructions regarding transportation back to the World of Sports complex. There was nothing. I combed through it three times. It did not say if there would be. I'm assuming there would be. It did not say how long it would be. It may have – maybe the those who put this together – maybe hoped that there was an assumption that, you know, there would be that. But
sure,
I want everybody that's listening to know that I've contacted Run Disney and I'm trying to get clarification on that. And we will report that. I'm hopeful that we'll be able to report that as soon as possible. And we'll probably post it on the website.
I did hear back from Run Disney. And they said, Michael, we will have shuttles to and from ESPN Wide World of Sport complex to all race weekend activities. What they did not say would be how long these shuttles would be operating. So my suggestion would be to leave the party sometime before 4:30.
One other thing, when we were looking
on Facebook,
when we were looking through the host resorts, it seemed to us that pretty much every resort, even if it wasn't listed as a host resort, you could walk to a host resort. So, for example, the Poly is a host resort. You could jump on the monorail and get there from the Contemporary. You could walk over from the Grand Floridian. Mike, do you remember there's one resort that it seems like it's sort of left out on its own?
And you know what's funny about this resort? This was the resort that everybody wanted to be at for the Princess Half Marathon, and that's Coronado Springs. Coronado Springs is not listed. It's officially an Animal Kingdom resort, and it's not listed, which is kind of funny. And also, Animal Kingdom isn't listed, and Kidani isn't listed either. Animal Kingdom Resort, I just noticed that, Michelle, that they're not listed either.
Oh, you're right.
Kind of interesting. So for those of you who are not staying at those resorts, I don't know what to say.
Take a cab?
Take a cab or drive a car to another resort and take a bus.
There must be buses from Animal Kingdom to the studios, right?
I would guess. But at 2:30 in the morning, I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Okay, so we're on number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and that's bag check information. And the fifth thing that you need to remember is that you're going to be checking your bag at the film section of the studios in the parking lot. And you're going to be picking it up the same place that they had it last year, which was at the Indiana Jones Stunt Spectacular. I remember our buddy Mike Paxton, I think, was telling us that it was kind of some people found it kind of challenging after running 10 miles to go up and down those stairs because the bag check was actually on the stage of the Indiana Jones Stunt Spectacular. Mike or Melissa, did either of you check a bag last year? I didn't check a bag.
I didn't.
I did check a bag, and the stories that were spreading throughout the Indiana Jones epic stunt spectacular over there that night, it was, you saw people because you had to wait in line for quite a while there. You know, you do that because there's just so many bags. But as you said, people had just run 10 miles in just terrible humidity and heat, and it was very hot, and people were cramping, people were tightening up, and then they were asked to walk down all these stairs. And then, you know, once you get to the stage, you have to walk right back up the stairs, and folks were really struggling with that. So, I think that you know, maybe somebody that's not a runner kind of put that together and thought this is a great venue. It's a big space and we have lots of room. But the stairs, you know, more people than not were having issues getting around that location.
That's interesting. So it's going to be in the exact same place. They're encouraging you to use the – they'll only accept the clear bags that they give you at the expo. You're going to put your race number. They give you a sticker in the bag to put on that. And they're asking people to consider maybe not checking a bag, or if you do, put the minimal amount in it. They're asking you that you not put any gels or liquids because I'm sure for security reasons the bags will probably be checked. And after the race, after you get your bag, they're going to be changing tents outside of the Indiana Jones for people who want to stay at the party but may not want to walk around for another 2 hours in sweaty clothes. So, okay. Mike, what's the next one?
So the next item is we're talking about refreshments or food and hydration and how it will be handled during the race, before, during, and after the race. And here's where it gets a little interesting, because it looks like there's a few policies that are now being put in place. They have said in the final race instructions that food and beverage will be available for purchase in the film lot at Disney's Hollywood Studios from 7 to 10 p.m. Now, what's important about to know that is that you obviously would have to bring money, or maybe bring your magic band that you could pay for your food and water if you're going to need that. Water will be available for registered participants in the runner-only corral, so there will be an area for runners only to go in, and they will be able to have some water there before the race. We read that there will be several, as always, for all Run Disney races, there will be several water stations, or they're calling them beverage stations, set up along the course. For 10 miles, I'm expecting somewhere between 3 to 5 stations, possibly more, but I'm guessing 5 max, because it's
probably
it's
depends
10 miles.
On the weather too, right?
Yeah, that's another thing too. There will be Dasani water, and there will be lemon lime Powerade, which I know Michelle loves. So here's the interesting thing. That it seems like this is the first Run Disney race where I've ever seen anything like this. And they're saying at the conclusion of the race, participants will receive 1 bottle of Dasani water, 1 bottle of Powerade, fruit, and various other food items. So that was kind of interesting to see that, Michelle.
Yeah, so it's all spelled out. I don't know. Melissa, do you carry water while you're running?
I do when I'm training at home, but I don't in Disney. Mm-hmm. But I did want to say, when you were talking about nutrition, I think it was the Tower of Terror last year, they had like a van for like hoagies or something out front. And I remember just being shocked, because I was thinking, who can eat a hoagie and then run 10 miles?
A hoagie is like a sub, right? Is that what we call it in New
yes.
England? Okay.
Yeah, I'm originally from Boston. I'm sorry. Let me translate to you. A sub.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know that I don't know. Maybe you can have your friends there, people who aren't running. There is a area for non-runners, and then you move into the runner area. So maybe it's just to drive the runners crazy. Mike, do you bring your own water?
No, I just pick it up on the course. And, you know, Melissa, if you get there early enough, you can eat that hoagie and then do all the dances with the DJ and kind of burn.
I'll try that this year.
That must be the plan. But, no, I just, you know, I try to alternate maybe 1 water and 1 Powerade. And, you know, Michelle, I think that the Powerade tastes better the thirstier you are. So it's kind of like on a sliding scale there, how, you know, how nice that stuff tastes.
I still think it tastes like you're drinking sweat, but I got a lot of flack last weekend when I did my 30-hour run, when I said that to people. But anyway, okay, so then we have our little boxes at the end, and I might forgo that for things that I'm going to buy at studios rather than have that stuff. But okay, the next one is safety information for the race. So the first thing you need to remember is, when you get your bib, you want to put on your emergency contact information. I always have my road ID on. Some people have a bracelet. I have one on my shoe. But the other thing that I thought was interesting was they're asking folks to, if you're walking in groups, for safety, to go into the last corral. We'll talk about that in a minute with etiquette. But here's something that I don't know. Maybe the two of you saw this before. I know Mike and I don't remember seeing this. We know that if they talk about the weather, if it's going to be if there's lightning, they say they could delay or cancel the race, which makes sense. But they are going to have on the medical stations, they're going to have different flags that talk about the weather conditions. So green flag will be good, yellow flag will be less than ideal conditions, participants with a high risk of heat stroke should withdraw, then red, potentially dangerous, and then black, extreme and dangerous conditions. They're asking people not to compete. So that's something kind of new, and let's hope we don't have that. But have either of you seen that before on a Disney race?
I haven't seen it. I mean, I assume that came out of last year. You know, it was remarkable to me as a new runner to see people basically dropping like flies. And I thought maybe it came from that.
Yeah, or the January race where it was very warm. What about you, Mike?
No, I agree. I think that, you know, as Disney puts on these races and, you know, other series around the country, they do as well, that they're learning. And, you know, it's more information for the runner, and it lets you make a more informed decision as to, you know, what's best for yourself. Because, you know, there are instances where maybe the conditions are against you and you just, you know, got to make a good decision, and it gives you the information.
Right, right.
And they have so many new runners that they may need to put a, you know, an excess amount of information out there for people who just don't know, like, if your body is telling you this, you should stop.
Now, the other thing we have to keep in mind, that for both the Tower of Terror 10-miler and the Wine and Dine Half Marathon, they both take place during hurricane season. And Florida and hurricanes sort of go together. So I have a feeling that that's also why it's here. But, Mike, I also agree with what you said, that they are learning every day, and they're learning that especially past January, and Michelle and I will tell you, out in Disneyland, the weather's been pretty warm for a lot of these races, and I think they have to keep that in mind. I don't expect it to be 90 at night, but it's good that they are taking a proactive approach to safety. Anything else on safety, Michelle, that you think we should bring up?
I think bottom line is just drink. You know, don't overdo it right before the race, but take a little something at each of the water stops. Don't take enough, you know, don't guzzle, but take a few sips. And at the water stations, I like to always recommend that people not get their water right at the beginning, but move along to maybe the end of the table. And then move off to the side if you're going to drink, and then continue on. If you're running, I usually do bring my own water. Just stay in the middle and be really careful of those cups, because it's wet and slippery there, and especially at night. They do a great job at clearing things away, but it can be a little chaotic. So that might be a time that you walk through those.
I'm pretty sure they use unwaxed cups, but you never can be too careful, that's for sure. Okay, our next item is kind of a one that I like to talk about a lot, and we're talking about etiquette. We're talking about race etiquette. And we've talked about this on the show before, Michelle, and I'd like to start off saying that regarding on race etiquette, the first thing that comes to mind is that everybody should honor wherever they're supposed to be in the corrals. If you are in Corral E, then you should be in Corral E. If you are with someone who is in Corral F and you want to run together, then the person with the higher, which would be the higher letter, can move back to the lower one. I think that's a race etiquette point that I wanted to make out. And another thing is, when you're out there on the course, try not to. I mean, how many times have we seen people with four across running or walking, and they are asking that we have two across? One of the things that they do not talk about, I don't believe, is if you're doing run-walk. And it's funny, with Jeff Galloway as the Run Disney consultant, you would think they would have had it. But one of the things that Jeff has suggested is that, you know, you raise your hand when you're going into your walk interval.
I think there is – actually,
is there, Michelle?
Yeah, I'm looking here. I want to say that it says a phrase there.
It's to move over if someone says, "Hey, I'm coming through,"
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, to say coming through or something like that. So I thought this was really interesting before we go to our guests, because this was right on the first page. It's really the first thing that you see. And I know previous years in race instructions, it was kind of tucked in the back and you couldn't really see it. It's the first thing that people see. So I really strongly recommend that people read and adhere to that race etiquette. So, Mike, how important is the race etiquette piece?
Well, I think you have to consider a lot of folks are getting out there for the first time, having their first taste of a distance race, you know, even with the 5K as well, which is, you know, a great distance to get that first experience, that some people are breaking etiquette, but they're not necessarily doing that out of, you know, wanting to do that. They just don't know what's going on. So I think that when you see that happening on the course, of course, we're not going to stop and educate everybody on all the, you know, the etiquette there is out there on the road. But
you mean we shouldn't be handing out lists while we're running? All right, I'll put my list away.
Have it on the back of your shirt or something. But, you know, I think that, you know, it gets frustrating sometimes. But, you know, I think that you just got to kind of understand that we were all first timers. And looking back, I know that I didn't know a lot of these things. And because of podcasts like this and, you know, websites that have informed me of these things that now I know. But, you know, if you're listening to the show, obviously you're probably a very educated runner, and I'm sure you're going to do the right thing.
That's a good point. Melissa, what do you think about etiquette?
I'm sure the first time I ran a Disney race, it started with a 5K, that I did all sorts of appalling things without knowing it, frankly. Now I know when I do appalling things. But as you do them, as you do these races longer, I do think you kind of start to realize, like, even if you know the etiquette, the people around you don't. So you'll have people trying to zoom up behind you, even if you're on the sides, and people stopping and starting in the middle. But you just have to be aware of this, and you have to be patient and realize, even though you're running, this is sort of a group effort that you've signed up for. And that you paid a lot of money to be out here. So if you're going slower than, you know, perhaps you would at a hometown race, well, just soak up the atmosphere and watch out for everybody.
I agree.
Well, Michelle, we are down to number 9, and I believe we may have already covered that, and that is the post-race transportation. But let's just touch upon it one more time. After the race, there will be a party, and I don't recall what the name of the – oh, Disney's Villains Hollywood Bash. And that party will go on till approximately 4 o'clock in the morning. And there will be a time when I believe it's 4:30 in the morning when the last bus will be leaving, I believe, Sunday morning, back to the resort. So we just wanted to make sure that everyone knew that. Know if there's anything else we want to talk about. I want to know
if our guests are going to be staying till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Not me, because we are driving home at 6 in the morning because I have to be at school on Monday. So I pretty much leave as soon as the race is completed. You know, that's my fun for the night. I can't imagine being out there till 4 in the morning. But I guess some people are just a little bit more hardy than I am.
Melissa?
I wish I could stay till 4 in the morning, and I will stay as long as I possibly can. But honestly, that might be 20 minutes after I finish the race. But I think the sort of tip that comes out of that is something that in college we used to call the disco nap. In the afternoon, if you're going to go out dancing that night when I was in college and now running, you take a disco nap in the afternoon so you can stay at the disco that much longer. So I would heartily, you know, recommend people consider a big nap in the afternoon.
I don't know what the attractions, you know, which attractions are open. I know that we, Team All Ears, went on Tower of Terror together. I don't know if it's worth it in terms of, you know, is it like Mickey's Not So Scary where there might not be as many people on the attractions in the studios? Because I didn't stay very long myself either last time. Anybody know?
Last year I heard and I experienced a bit that when I first finished, it was incredibly crowded. But if you hang in there for an hour, it thins out fast as people's runners come in and they go home.
Yeah, I think most of the crowd will be there till maybe 2:30, and then after that, it begins to thin out. So it'll be interesting to see. And I guess it depends upon what you've done that day, during the day, how you've taken care of yourself, how you've rested, and you know, you just ran 10 miles and it's midnight or whatever, and you know, get kind of tired. Plus, you have to get on a bus, and then you have to get back to your resort, and obviously, you want to take a shower before you. And go to sleep. So there's a lot to consider.
I know I wasn't hungry, but I know I wanted a beer at the end.
So. Yes.
Okay, we ready for the last one? Drum roll.
Ready.
Drum roll. Ready. The last thing that you need to remember is to come to the Mickey Miles podcast meetup if you can. It's on Sunday, October 6th at 2 p.m. and it's going to be at the Beach Club Solarium. So, Melissa, I hope you're going to be there because you'll be at the Beach Club. And, Mike, it sounds like you'll be driving home.
Yeah, we have to, you know, if I could get on an airplane, life would be simpler, but I'm working on that.
How long does it take you to get to Missouri?
It's about a 15-hour drive.
Holy cow. Wow. After running a race, good for you.
But I'd love to be at the meetup because, you know, I really love this show because you guys really are your friends out on the road during the training. And, you know, all these podcasts are out there for a lot of fun. But, I really believe in the fact that you guys do not only inform people and educate people on the fun of these races, but also, you know, it's a lifestyle change for a lot of people. So I'm sure it's going to be a great meetup, and I really wish I could be there.
Oh, thank you. I know we had him on the show for some reason, Mike. That was very kind of you.
Oh, yes.
All right, so there we have it, 1 through 10. And I'm going to ask you guys, put you on the spot, to ask if you will come back after you've run this race and help us with our post-race review.
Absolutely. I would absolutely love to.
Oh, great, great. Sounds good. Mike?
Well, I guess that about wraps it up for this preview of the Tower of Terror 10-miler. And we want to thank Melissa Iannetta and Mike Rahman from Melissa Iannetta and Mike Rahman for coming on board. And we want to also encourage people to check Mike's podcast if you already have not. It's the Be Our Guest podcast. Very successful, very popular, and it's one of the many podcasts that are out there. And Mike, you do a great job, and we just want to make sure that we put a little plug in for you.
Thanks so much. And if I may, we have a show coming that actually came out this past Monday. It's our 601st episode, and it's with one of a friends of your show. It's Mr. Mike Bankhead from I believe he runs for Team All Ears, and he gives his entire kind of his Disney backstory and how he got into running all these Disney races. And it is an amazing listen. And, you know, I just sit back and let Mike tell his story. So if you get a chance to check out our show and you're, you know, obviously a fan of running and Disney where they kind of combine, Mike is a great friend, and it's an inspirational story. So that I think that the Mickey Miles audience would just love to hear how Mike became an avid Disney runner.
Oh, that's so great. Thank you so much for letting
Mike,
us know.
When will
that
be posted? When will that be posted on iTunes?
Yeah, that'll be out on this past Monday, so that would be September 22nd.
Great. Okay. So we'll great. Be listening. Thank you. Okay, 601. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Time. yeah. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. So for Melissa Iannetta and for Mike Rahman and for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying, we'll see you on the road. This episode of the Mickey Mouse Podcast has been brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. And with the Tower of Terror looming, you know, everyone gets a little scared, gets a little frightened around Halloween, but we don't get frightened because we know that we're in good hands with MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, and we're looking forward to all our race vacations because they handle everything for us, and we would like to see you also have no worries on your vacations, be it a Run Disney vacation or any vacation for that matter. So go visit the Vacation Planners. They're very professional. It's a fee-free agency. Go visit them at MEI Travel, MEI-travel.com, or mousefantravel.com, or you can click on their banner at MickeyMousePodcast.com. So for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa. We'll see you on the road.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.